Hello and welcome to Booktopia On. I am Bronwyn.
I'm John.
I'm Sarah.
And our topic today is reading outside your comfort zone. So just to start, why don't we tell everyone what our comfort zones are, John?
Well, I spent a long time getting dusty sitting in a secondhand bookshop. So my comfort zone is dead people. I like to read the well-establishedly dead, the rotted, the old. History generally burps up the best of writing, so I've just let that be my comfort zone. Just the best.
I find this question quite weirdly difficult. Like,
you would.
Yeah, I would, wouldn't I? I don't know. Like, I feel like I have my comfort zone. I would feel like favorites, and they pop all over. Like, by virtue of this job, I've read a lot of crime and YA. But you know, I don't know if that's my comfort zone. It's where it's what I probably read most of these past years.
What gets you out of your slumps? So what do you normally turn to?
Yeah, like old favorites. Right, so, well, like, I was rejuvenated after reading Jane Eyre or Persuasion, or I often, like, return to things I read in my teens, like the Georgette Heyer and the Mary Stuart. I don't know, like,
so old
I like
favorites.
A bit of fantasy. I like a bit of classics.
I think that's a good
It's
point.
More about the actual books and how I feel about them than about the genre. Yeah.
So maybe for you, yeah, your comfort zone is old favorites, like that.
That's
in
my
a
comfort
way.
Zone.
Yeah. And John's is kind of like
dead.
And my comfort zone is fantasy. Yeah. I like
John's is dead.
Well, when you serve people in the bookshop for years, you meet people with really established comfort zones. They just don't move out of their area. You'll see the same person walk in, ignore every section, go to their section. And buy from their section only and then walk out. And I was very much like that. If you saw me walk into a bookshop, I would go and judge you by how many classics you had and what variety were. If I just saw Jane Austen's and Bronte's and Dickens, I would like, tisk, really, and be really annoying,
like,
and then walk out.
Widely.
Yeah. And so then I would go, like, secondhand bookshops were great because you'd always find these crazy old writing that you could that I could enjoy. But I would just go to one spot.
Yeah.
Since working here, completely different story. So I've smashed out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, me too. I mean, again, I wasn't a huge. I mean, I've always loved books, but I was never a huge reader. Like, I didn't really read in my spare time like I do now. Like, I read for school and I read the big things like Harry Potter and all that. But since coming here, you know, you just hear about books.
Trick is hearing about them. So when you're in a position where you're surrounded by other readers and they all read their stuff and they have their preferences, but if they're passionate about a book, or, you know, if you're speaking to publishers and they're passionate about a book, they will sell you on it, even if it's not something that you think you're interested in just on looking at. So, like, being surrounded by book talk, I think, really does help you cross the boundaries.
Sometimes it's extremely difficult to get someone to go out of their comfort zone. As a bookseller, it's... You know, they're on crime, and they read crime, and then they'll have their specific area of crime. You know, they used to have customers who the bloodier the better. None of those cozy mystery kind of crimes.
Oh, Agatha Christie, that's another comfort zone for me.
Yeah, and you couldn't move them out. You know, and if I gave them something that wasn't as bloody as they liked, you know, then they'd come back and they'd go, "No, that wasn't what I was looking for. You failed as a bookseller." And you know, so you get into the habit as a bookseller of trying to feed their comfort zone, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when my friends ask me for book recommendations, my first question is, what genres do you like to read? Mm. And from there, I'll just sort of pick something I think they might enjoy, or I look at their bookshelf or something like that. Because everybody does have a comfort zone.
Like, can you think of a book you've read and you want something similar to that?
Yeah.
Because someone might answer that question, what's your favourite genre? And they might say, I really like romance. But they might be asking you for recommendations because they don't have any romance they want to read at the moment, and they're looking for something different.
And something like romance it depends, do they want, like, a pure romance book, or do they want, you know... Romantic elements, exactly.
Oh, yeah, every genre has its subgenre.
Exactly. But, I mean, look at the... we did that blog post just last week, was it, Sarah? The, you know, 8 books you should read if you love Nevermore. I mean, so that's the kind of thing that I do...
Basing a recommendation on another read, I think, is helpful.
Yeah. If you love this, you'll love this one.
But is there anything wrong with, like, I used to always try to talk people out of, you know, getting in their comfort zone and trying to break them out and break them free. But some of them resisted as strongly as you do with spoilers and a few things like that. And Georgette Heyer.
I've calmed down about... I don't have any problem with Georgette Heyer.
No, you don't have a problem with Georgette Heyer.
No, but I don't have issue with your issue with her either. I agree that she's not Jane Austen. Like, there's no comparison. I enjoy Georgette Heyer, but I'm not saying that she's the same as Georgette. We've gotten off the side. But I just want to go on the record as your feelings there, I agree with you.
To each their own.
I'm not going to argue you on that one. I'll argue you on many points, not that.
You could have let that slide, but you went, no.
No.
I'm going in. I'm going in for that. There's no I way he's going to get over that rubbish.
I love her a lot. She wrote great books, but she's not Jane Austen. Anyway. What was I saying before I got...
I don't know, Sarah. You distracted me.
Something like...
I'm gonna admit.
Oh, is there anything wrong with it?
I think it's important for people to read outside.
Yeah. Well, I admit that it's changed me as a writer. Mm. Okay. Mm. All my writing up until joining Booktopia had I felt it didn't have the large vista that it could have, and didn't have both sides of the story. Didn't have a kind of a 3D nature to it. Because I just read in the one area, and I was kind of like a bit of leftover from history. I was a mash of old stuff in my brain. I didn't read anything which was, you know, in the last 50 years. And here, I've had to read everything. I've had to read everything that's been published lately. I've had to catch up on a lot of stuff. So I had to read people's other books, their older books, the people who are coming in to do interviews. So I've been forced to read cross-genre, cross-time, deal with what's going on right now.
And this has had a good effect on you, you believe.
Absolutely.
This is
extraordinary. I'm so glad we're recording this.
evidence.
The next time we have a talk about genre versus literature, this podcast will get trotted out.
There's no chance I could have written the book I've written without...
Reading outside.
Because the flow of Girl on the Page is so fast.
Mm.
And everything I'd written up to then was snail pace.
Yeah.
It was just... so slow and so detailed, and there was no pace to it at all. And yet, you know, sitting across from really massive successes like Di Morrissey and Fiona McIntosh, who tell me across in interviews how they do their stuff and reading their works themselves, and some of the great crime writers we get to talk
to,
you learn so much about the craft.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing to hear. I'm really excited to hear John say that. But yes, I think it holds true no matter what you're reading. Even like, so if you're resistant to reading outside your comfort zone because you only want to read like high literature, then you've heard it right here. You're maybe missing out on some stuff. If you're resistant to reading like the high literature because you just want like a really good read, I reckon all of us could recommend you something that's, you know, highly regarded high literature that everyone will enjoy.
Yeah, that is completely accessible.
Yeah, that's a good podcast topic, actually. Let's do that one.
So, I mean, what do you think, though, if, you know, how widely we should read in that? If I know there's a genre that I don't enjoy, or not necessarily not enjoy, but maybe I struggle with, or how important is it? Like, should we force ourselves to read that genre?
I think you go to the person who's in love with that genre and then get them to make recommendations of the best.
But see, I did that with you guys, like, and here's my example, and I'm going to get death glares, everyone.
Oh, what are you going to say?
That I read Persuasion, and while I enjoy the story, always loved Jane Austen's stories, but I can't read. I find it very difficult to read, like, the way the language flows. I've never been able to really process it easily. Like, it's such a slog to read these kinds of books for me. I'm same with Shakespeare.
You could get into that mindset, though, Bron. Like,
that's what I'm saying. Should I persevere and read more, or should I just go, it's not for me, I'll watch the movies instead?
You've admitted to liking the story.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that there's so many, like, the language to you, I think you might have a bit of a mental block about it, but I also think it's familiarity. And it's like if you were reading a fantasy series, you put that effort in to get the
whole
language
new world
and
that.
you go into it with this open mind and you try and understand it because you know that it's not the same as what you're used to. If you had that mindset when you're reading classics, instead of just shutting down and being like, I don't understand it and it's not flowing well for me, I reckon you could break through.
I mean, over time, over a very long period of time, I've read a lot of these things, like, from school. You know, we read Frankenstein and we read Shakespeare. And
school reading doesn't count.
No, it doesn't count at all. we've got Rob upstairs, who's been 35 years in the book trade, and he's telling us he doesn't like Jane Austen. I mean, we've got to fix that. But that's all from school. He admits that school ruined Jane Austen for him. And, I mean, it kills me when I hear those stories.
It's not school's fault. It's the age you are when you're in school. When you are in school... I mean, okay, I'm not saying that it can't sometimes be teachers to do like, with this the teacher boring. On the school. But I think generally speaking, teachers face a huge challenge because they've got people who are of an age to whatever they've been told to do, they want to do the opposite and they're not interested in what adults have to
you
say.
You were rebellious, weren't you, Sarah?
I don't know. Like, I had my moments. Anyway, leaving me aside, I just think that and I'm not speaking down about teenagers because I believe teenagers and young people have an amazing viewpoint and they've got a lot of interesting things to say and like...
Plus, we were all there once.
Yeah, we were all young and I think that the worldview you have at that age is so important and something that we should all try and, you know, respect and cling to a little bit in a way. So without speaking down about teenagers, I do want to say when you're sitting in a classroom, you maybe don't want to be there and you've got an adult telling you to read a book and you have to do assignments for that book and... It takes some of the joy out of it. No matter how much you might enjoy the book, if you stumbled on it yourself, doing it in a classroom, I think.
Okay, so if I enjoy the story of, you know, Persuasion is compelling, but the language, what would you recommend I read next?
So, Room with the View.
Room with the View, okay.
Because Room with the View is 100 years closer to us.
So the language might be a little...
And it is. And Room with a View just has this wonderful flow to it. And it never really bogs down.
And it's quite short.
And it's short.
So you won't be like...
So is that... Yeah, maybe that's a key as well. Like if you're going to read outside your comfort zone is starting with one that's something that's recommended for someone that you trust. You know, I trust both of you guys with your book, you know, experience and recommendations. And something that's maybe a little bit short. Like don't pick up a Homer.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a whole other story.
There are so many bad choices people make when they go, I'm going to do the classics, and they start off with Ulysses, and you're like, not James Joyce.
Like if someone didn't read fantasy, and they were like, I'm going to start a fantasy, and then picked up like a Remedy Fire, they'd be like, look, it's a little big, it's a little heavy. Let's just pick up something a bit lighter, maybe start with like a YA fantasy, and ease into it. And I think that's definitely key.
I know I talk about Jane Eyre all the time, but I do feel like for me, that was a book that I read, and the first time I was reading it, I identified strongly with a lot of the things that Jane said, and I had that feeling, mm-hmm. which I think is key, where you're like, oh my God, this is something like when you have that experience of like, oh, people in the past had feelings and stuff just like we do, and it's so amazing. Like that is a turning point, and then after that, you'll want to seek out more.
See, it's funny. I mean, I had that experience, but with sort of just your contemporary YA, because I never used to read YA. I was, again, all fantasy or whatever. And then when I got here, because Taneo is so passionate about, you know, YA, I'd read things like Everything, you know, and I got so used to escaping when I read books, you know, going into a different world. And sure, we have the same feelings, you know, the characters have feelings that we understand, but in having references that I got, or, you know, shows, they're watching a show that I've watched, and that kind of extra bond sort of makes you fall in love with the genre.
Yeah, well, there's a few things going on because you know, for a lot of readers, they've got to get back into the habit of reading. And if you're reading something you enjoy, and that's what develops the habit of sitting down and actually wanting to try another book and developing it, that can be a 2-year process of becoming a reader again. You know, of just reading what you like. And that means you get into the comfort zone and you roll along and you just stay within the area, you know, and you like, and you're like, I'm good with this. And some of the readers who would come into my shop would ask me to get them out of their comfort zone. Yeah. And I would sort of choose, I would talk to them a lot before even making a decision and find out what their other interests are. And then I would take books that were in different quadrants. And you know, and they were so cheap at second hand that people would just buy the 3 or 4 books that I offered.
Yeah.
And then they would come and they would try these different books. So one might be Pat Barker's Regeneration, which is a more recent title, and the other one might be Room with a View, and another one might be a Barbara Tuckman history. You know?
Yeah.
You know, and just sort of set them in different places and My feeling with this kind of approach, it gives people more opportunities. If they don't get into that part of Tuckman, they'll then pick up the regeneration. They might go, oh, this is really easy. I like this. And they go through it, building confidence.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I've mentioned a few times in this podcast that when I first started reading, I looked for the thinnest books I could find. And it was really the thinnest ones.
You wanted to finish them quickly.
Yeah. And I just felt that I could. That's possible. I can read that from cover to cover.
See, so I think the key to reading outside whatever your comfort zone may be is the resistance to it is that you have a thing. Like, you didn't want to get bogged down in a really long book, so you looked for short books.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some version of that is true to everyone. Like, consider why it is that you don't like reading a certain type of book. And then maybe ignore the most famous ones or the best ones or the ones everyone says you have to, and just look within that genre for something that genuinely interests you. Because if you can overcome that initial stumbling block of you're doing something you don't want to do, it's like anything, it's like exercise, it's like diets, it's like anything that we feel like we should be doing that we don't want to do, you kind of sometimes have to make yourself want it. So yeah, like, don't force yourself to read something outside your comfort zone because you think you should. Find something outside your comfort zone that you're genuinely interested in, and then start there.
That means, like what I was describing before, when you go into a bookshop, don't always go to your favorite section.
Yeah, like, go through all the shelves.
So browse a little bit. Just wander about and see what else is there.
This is why I'm really glad that we have our book club, Sarah, because it has got me to read things that I might not necessarily pick up. Like,
so we last read Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine. Would you never have chosen to read that?
Probably not. I mean, not that I would look at it and go, oh, I hate that book. It's just probably because there are so many other things to read that I really, really want to read. So I probably wouldn't have even gone to that part of the bookstore, you know what I mean? As John said, I would have gone straight to the sci-fi and the fantasy and even the YA, and I wouldn't have gone to that.
The problem of wanting to read so many different things all over the place.
Yeah, well, like, you're one of the, you know, the omnivores of readers.
I don't read enough non-fiction. I feel like that's a place where I could really branch out.
And that's a scary place. Non-fiction. Like, for a lot of people, that's a terrifying place to go wandering into. I mean, when you're talking about non-fiction, I mean, there's a ton of stuff.
There's so many different types.
We're surrounded, you know, by picture books and all those sort of things. And you know, there's a lot of very interesting, you know, cookbooks and the like, and they're all in the, and big books on fashion and stuff.
Yeah.
But when we sort of look at sort of history and bio and memoir.
That's what I think of I say non-fiction.
And that's the things I don't tend to read. I mean, I'll read the occasional non-fiction memoir or something like Rosie Waterland, but for the most part, I steer clear of it. I think
I'd like to read more history.
I want to.
But you know what happens? I mean, this is the funny thing. When you start getting into history, I remember getting into an Italy comfort zone. So I read one book on Italy, then whenever I went into a shop, I ignored all the other histories and just kept buying in Italy.
More
and
Italy, please.
I kept reading Italy.
It's human nature. You find one thing you like and we naturally want more.
Yeah, so I've got this weird little collection at home of more Italy books than I'll ever read in my lifetime, just sitting on the shelf. And all these Napoleon books. I read one biography of Napoleon and went, well, he's an interesting fellow. And every time I saw a Napoleon book, I just added to my
board. See, it's funny. I find that the few non-fiction books that I have read or I'm really excited to read that I can think of is I've started a book called A Time Traveler's Guide to Medieval England. And I did it for research purposes, and so I really enjoyed it because it sort of, it's like second person. It puts you in, like, you know, you walk down the street and you smell this kind of thing, and it's, so it's purely a research thing. But it is nonfiction, like, it's history. I'm learning about what it was like back in medieval England. But I think I need a reason, I think, for that comfort to read out of
that. I don't know if you've read it yet, but didn't you recently buy a history book about a really interesting
woman? Julie, I can't pronounce the last name, Julie Dobigny or something, and again that, but that's for research purposes.
No, that research is, that's for my interest. You call it research, but it's your interest, and your imagination is going there. So you can class it. We'll allow you call it research, but we're calling it that's your actual interest, and your interest is driving into these.
But that's
areas.
The only time that I've really gone to, like, willingly skipped down the road and gone, oh, nonfiction. I'm excited. It's like
I need to do it more. I gravitate sometimes towards, like, historical fiction where it's like based on fact.
Yes.
But I still like the strong narrative and, like, plot that you get from a fiction novel. So yeah, the idea of, I guess I feel like, I guess I shy away from it because I feel like, you know, if you're going to pick up a book, it's like I want to go into something that's not real life.
Mm.
But, like, the past isn't real life either.
It's no. So all yeah. things that you...
Was just it all, pining away.
Those wondrous things you do when you're reading a classic. You're 200 years or 150 years separated from your characters and you marvel at that they're suffering the same things that you're suffering from, are just in even worse circumstances than you're in presently. I mean, that's what history is great for. Is
perspective.
That, it really connects you to the past.
Yeah, and also shakes you away from just how... I feel claustrophobic within this period if I don't read history, if I don't keep myself... Because they're sort of like doors out of this moment. And also there's connections to why things are happening, which make this moment make more sense, you know?
Yeah, you can really view now through a historical lens when you read in that in a certain time frame. And it does, you start noticing things about culture or connecting dots. And I don't know, like I remember once having one of those like moments when I was really young, and I think we were doing, I must have still been in high school, and we were doing ancient Egypt, and they were talking about the way that the Egyptian gods were worshipped and how they had whole stories around them, and they used to just keep telling like any ancient mythology. And I was like, it's just like Hollywood celebrities nowadays and how we just make up all these stories about them, and tabloids are completely untrue and we all know it but we still buy into it. It's just that they're actual real living people now. We haven't completely made them up out of nowhere, but they all have magical powers on TV screens and like,
of course they do.
Yeah, that was a moment, but stuff like that. I've segued again. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, my recommendation to people out there who are in their comfort zone and maybe feel like it's getting a little bit close and a little bit narrow and they want to see something else.
And maybe that's why they've stopped reading, because they've read in their comfort zone until they're bored.
Yeah, that's something that happens a lot, and people just drop out of reading, which is a real shame.
Yeah, lately I think because I've realised that there's so much other stuff out there that's great. I remember a while back I started to get a little bored of fantasy because it felt in my way.
You read too much.
It was too much of the same thing, and I was like, I want to mix things up, and that's when I was reading other types, and it's really good.
Yeah, it is.
To read.
But I think maybe that is why a lot of people stop.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you don't have to these days. You can either walk into a bookshop and start just open a book and read the first couple of pages. But online, there's lots of ways to actually get a taste of a book before actually handing over your money. I think we're in a pretty good space these days for getting a taste of something without actually committing.
Yeah.
You know, completely to something. Even friends' collections. You know, if you're over at their house and you just pick a book up and give it a whirl. That's always. I mean, there's no commitment there. You just all you're doing is having a taste.
Oh, you know what I would do so often when we're in here speaking to authors, and listening to them talk about their own book really makes you want to read it.
Yes.
So I would challenge people to like scroll through the Booktopia podcast until you reach an author you've never heard of, and just listen to them talk about their book. And if they don't make you want to read it, I mean, I'll be surprised, but also then try another one.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea. I mean, I would just say things like, you know, join a book club or talk to your bookish friend who's really, really passionate about books in general. I think that's really important. Hopefully you have someone in your life that's like that. I mean, generally you can think of someone, whether it's mom or...
We get to work with a bunch of people like
we
that.
We do.
That's the thing. We're so damn lucky, aren't we?
So I just want to finish with, I mean, is there that one book that you own or you've been thinking about buying that's outside of your comfort zone that you really want to read but you haven't got to it yet? What is that book?
Oh, God.
I can start, if that helps.
Yeah, go for it.
I bought this ages ago, and I really want to read it, but I just haven't yet. It's 4-3-2-1.
Paul Asser. Yeah, that's a challenge.
Yeah, it's a massive book, but I love the concept of it. It's not normally what I would pick up, but I really, really want to read that, and maybe that should be a challenge for me to read it this year.
Okay, John.
I mean, because these days everything that I pick up and hear is outside of my comfort zone. Mm. Even I haven't really got into a comfort zone of falling into only read the crime ones that come through.
Yeah, you're outside the comfort zone.
All the time.
Yeah, but that's
but is there something you've been meaning? Okay, ignore, because I can't really do the comfort zone thing either, but is there something you've been meaning to read for ages that's just been sitting there and you know that you'll probably enjoy it but you haven't read it?
Well, there are tons, and we spoke last week about, you know, how we... and we find time to read, and I suggested, you know, doing crime and doing some time.
John's solution, go to jail. Yeah,
that's my solution.
He loves dead people and going to jail. Okay.
There are lots of things like that where I if I had some of the business books that come through, they're outside my comfort zone. Mm. But when I've actually read some of them, I've really enjoyed their way of thinking. But I will always, if I'm looking to pile, I'll always go, oh, later, and move on. So there's been a couple of really good books on that are on my pile at home, and TBR pile at home, that I just keep avoiding, even though I want to read them.
Yeah.
I find that that's an issue for me as well. It's almost like with so much now, where I'm just saturated by choice.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's really hard. It's like, it's not like I can't find anything. It's like you're constantly, everything looks good, and you're looking for the one that's like really going to grab you, like above all of the other ones.
I apologize for us in advance. I can just imagine people listening out
and
there
being
just,
like, I know it sounds terrible.
Just playing their tiny little violins.
You know? It's not a problem. It's a great privilege.
It's a blessing.
And I thank my lucky stars all the time that I get to work in a place where books are around all the time.
Yeah.
And, like, I love it, and I recognize that it's a really lucky position to be in. But it still makes it hard to make a choice,
right? Really, like,
the more choices you have, the more difficult it is.
So you can't,
you've only got two books to choose from, you can make that choice very quickly.
Remember
how easy it used to be to decide what to watch on TV? Now it's impossible.
Yeah.
You can waste an hour scrolling through Netflix because you can't land on anything that seems better than all the other things.
That's so true, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's our
first world problems. Yeah.
Well, there we go. So that's my goal for the year then, read 4321. And I want you guys to come back to me later and tell me what that book is that you
want. Those 100 books are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.